Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Horror Movie News. Today, we have one desperate dad, one missing daughter, and multiple screens, and also two special guests. Today, on Horror Movie News!
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Huh? Don't you blame the movie!
Scary stuff.
Don't
blame That's what's coming.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Why not?
Oh, yes. I believe we have two cycles in studio right now. But first, we gotta introduce ourselves. This is episode 42. 42.
Life, the meaning of life, the universe, and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We're coming to you live here in sunny Northern California. No, Southern California. We're in North Hollywood. Welcome. I am Anthony Becerra, and to my left I have...
What's up, Carrie Lane here.
Yes, and we're both on one side because we have special guests. On the other side, we have Sev Ohanian.
Yes. Hi.
Say something, please.
Hi, my name is Sev Ohanian. I'm a co-writer and producer on the film Searching, and I'm so thrilled to be here with you guys, as well as my guest friend, Natalie.
Right on, Natalie.
Hello. Thank you guys for having me and including me. I'm a producer on Searching as well, and I'm so, so excited to be here.
Right. We're excited to have you.
Yeah, this is great. We're going to pick your brain. But first, we got to do some crypt keeping. So pretty much where you can find our show. So if you want to find our show, you can find it on multiple ways. You can find it on youtube.com/thepopcorntalknetwork, as well as our official website, thepopcorntalk.com. And you can reach out to us at Twitter at horrornewsptn. And we got a debut of our Instagram. It's up and live. Yes, don't ask why it took so long, because I don't have a good excuse. But yeah, we got a new Instagram, and it's at the same name to make things easier on everybody. Horrornewsptn on Instagram. Yes, we will be doing some. I just did like a behind the scenes for like we went live.
It was on your stories, yeah.
On my story, I know social media. and lastly, we also have Apple Podcasts. You can go on iTunes. Just type in Horror Movie News, and then look for that thumbnail behind me right over there. Oh God, this camera's everything's backwards for me. Please leave a 5-star rating, 5 stars, 5 stars, and tell us anything you want. Really, any feedback, any suggestions, and just like if you love the show, we'd love to hear that as well. And yeah, any suggestions for the show, we take it all. Now, let's get into it. So, our special guest. So, I have a little overview of pretty much like previous work you all have worked on. So, Natalie, starting with you, you helped produce Take Me back in, that was released in 2017.
I did.
It was starring with, oh, it was both of you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's the one that overlaps. That was later on. Yeah. I do have an overview for both, what you guys have worked on as well.
Nice.
Yeah. So, it starred Pat Neely and Orange is the New Black's lead, Taylor Schilling. As well, you also produced Duck Butter. That was released this year, right?
Yeah.
And that starred Aaliyah Shawkat, Laia Costa, and Mae Whitman.
Yep.
As well as All About Nina, I believe, 2018. Oh, it's about to be released this month, right?
September 28th.
September 28th. There you go. And that's starring Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Common.
Dreamy.
Dynamic duo. Yeah. I love Mew. People refer to her as Mew, so I'm just like, yeah, she's great.
She is.
And for you, you have a good amount of producer credits under your belt, starting with back in 2015, it was Memoria.
Memoria, yeah.
Yeah, and then led into The Intervention in 2016, The Labyrinth in 2017, Dismissed in 2017. And here's one that kind of stands out, like, I think in the public eye a bit more, is Fruitvale Station, which is
that was my first feature, yeah.
Wow, and that was also Ryan Coogler's breakout debut, correct?
Yep, absolutely.
Wow, yeah, and that got, like, rave reviews. And now look what he's doing now.
Yeah, he's doing a couple of small movies.
they're still hits, yeah. And as well as, let's see, you also did, Take Me. That's the one where you guys both worked on. So far you worked, that was the first time you guys kind of worked together was on Take Me?
Yeah, in a really official producing capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the one.
Right on. And so from there, you went on to work on Searching, of course, which is what we're talking about today. And also, I've noticed that you guys are doing a run, which is pre-production?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we'll touch about that.
Yeah, we're talking about Run for sure.
Yeah, right on. I'm down for that. I did read a synopsis, and it sounded very interesting. But I would like to ask you, how did you come about producing? Like, how did you know it was... In a sense, you're calling something you wanted to do. And that you can answer one by one. We could start with...
Seb, yeah. So for me, producing is a passion. It is my passion. And I went to USC Film School, and so did Natalie, and so did our producing partner, Anish, you know, Shaganti, who directed Searching. And when I was at film school, I started seeing this pattern that the films that I wanted to make were often the films that the faculty would not allow students to make. Because it would be the ones that would be – they would tend to be a bit more ambitious, a bit more dangerous, a bit more risky. And you know, they were encouraging the students to make more – artistic films and films that would be maybe in my eyes a little bit boringer. So I kind of started creating this habit where every time I would see a student getting denied their request to direct or write a film, I would just say to them, hey, why don't we just go and make it anyway, and we'll do it over the weekend, and maybe we'll just use the school's equipment, and you know, maybe it's, maybe it'll all work out. So I just kind of started this habit of doing that, and I loved, as a creative producer, you get it, you get to help create this collective vision with the director and make something. And like, the, for me, the pride and joy comes from like usually having to make the impossible possible. And you know, we were independent film producers, and we have been for a long time, and I think that was ultimately what led Ryan Coogler to reaching out and asking me to help him produce Fruitvale Station. So that was kind of the start for me.
Wow. And for you, Natalie?
For me, it started a little bit younger, actually. I was in high school in Burbank at Providence High School, and I was in a media focus program. And we would, you know, we'd split up in little groups and have to produce, direct, write, edit, you know, combination of roles per person. And no one ever wanted to produce, like, ever. Everyone would volunteer to direct and whatnot. And I, for whatever reason, maybe I was like the teacher's pet looking back, but would get picked on to produce every single time. And I was really good at it. And after a while, by the time I was a senior and had done a lot of like shorts and music videos, I was like, I should stop fighting this. Like, I'm good at it and no one else wants to do it. So maybe that'll help me stand out once I get to USC. So I just embraced it, and now I love it and can't imagine doing anything else.
Actually, just hearing that briefly, could you both in your own words explain what a producer does? Because I think some people know the title, but what is like...
I honestly don't know what a producer does.
I was
saying one word, everything.
Okay, I like that.
it's tough. I mean, there's a lot of different types of producers.
True.
And, you know, the kind of producer that, you know, Natalie and I have been growing into, because, you know, a lot of like, a lot of the credits you listed off for me were me just kind of building my credits and building relationships and a reputation. But it's, you know, as a creative producer, we, like Natalie said, we do everything. And at the same time, it's even less that we're doing so many things, but we're responsible for many things. And like the way I've always liked to describe it is, think of a director as somebody who has a microscope. You know, when we're making a film in prep or shooting or even beyond, they are responsible to always have an answer for a billion questions. At any given moment, an actor might ask them, what am I doing here? Or the costume designer might say, is that supposed to be that rip? Or the makeup artist might ask about a cut or a location. Or, I mean, a billion kajillion questions are coming at them every second. It's the hardest job in the world. And they have to have an answer that is very specific to what that is. If they don't have that answer, they're not doing their job. But the problem with that, the problem with having a microscope, is they tend to lose sight of the bigger picture. And they need backup. A director, a good director needs a good producer, or in our case, a good pair of producers who we can look at the bigger picture. So when they're focusing on the trees, we're looking at the forest. And we can always be like, hey, like in the case of Anish, that decision you just made is a great one, but keep in mind this scene is also about all these other things. So like let's try and find a way to like make this work for that. So, you know, we're here to guide the director, but at the same time, it's, you know, film sometimes, in my opinion, is referred to as like this auteurship, where it's like the director's vision. And I think that's absolutely true in many ways and fine. But, you know, our philosophy as a team has always been kind of more of like a collab. You know, film, I would argue, is the single most collaborative art form in existence. Right? Like, I mean, I maybe sounds like I'm overstepping my bounds here, but it's like you have so many different people with so many specialties all collaborating to make one thing come to life. It has to be a collective vision, and I think that's what producers and directors do for each other. We help each other in ways that we need that backup.
Wow.
I'm not even going to add to that.
Yeah.
I think it's a good summary.
It's a great explanation.
Yeah. Well, let's say, also, keeping on the topic of a producer, like what they do, I would also say what helps a producer out, as in like what skills do you find yourself having that really help you in this position specifically, that you're like, huh, I'm a good people person, like I can handle talent, or like, huh, like I'm very organized, I can handle all these stacks of paper, I can handle the budget or whatnot. Like what are some skills that you find personally in yourselves that really help you out?
Google spreadsheets. Kidding. Yeah. Kidding, but not kidding. No, I think it's, I think you touched on it a little bit, being a people person, but further than that, being a good communicator. Like we're at any given moment communicating between, you know, crew members, making sure that, like, the studio is talking to whoever. And I think being clear and concise is, like, the number one kind of tool that you need.
I agree. Have you guys ever seen, like, that meme that's, like, six panels and it's, like, what... Like, my occupation, what my mom thinks I do, what my friends think I do, what society thinks I do.
What I actually do.
And then, like, for producing, like, I'll skip all the other ones, but what I actually do, it's, like, a picture of a guy on a horse herding a bunch of kittens. And I think that's so true sometimes for us. Like, it's like exactly what Natalie said. It's on top of having a lot of patience and having a lot of foresight in a lot of ways and being able to kind of plan ahead and solve problems and put out fires before they come about.
Okay. I like that, yeah. Nice. Trying to be have some sort of foresight, you know,
mm-hmm. in a sense. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like getting ahead of things, for sure.
Okay.
We have a live chat going. If you didn't know, viewers and listeners, comment down below if you weren't able to join us live, and welcome to everybody joining us live. Rugged English in the chat says, love the analogy. You look at the trees while we look at the forest.
Yeah, that was poetic. Poetic, yeah.
I got you.
Also, he's the writer.
Oh, of course, yeah. Co-writer, yes.
And Wellington agrees, communication is key.
Also, Wellington, Rugged English, if you guys have any questions for these wonderful people as well, please comment in the live chat. Carrie will pick up on that and we'll ask them later. Also, just to stay on one last question with the whole producer theme, is what would be some advice to, say, someone who's up and coming, who is interested in producing? Like, how would you, in a sense, advise them to be like, hey, you should try it out in this way?
I know what Sev's going to say.
Yeah, okay. Well, I have a lot of advice. I can give you guys the boring advice and the fun advice. The boring advice is self-educate. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all these amazing film schools that exist that are also amazingly expensive. I'm saying you don't necessarily need to go to them. And I've gone to them. I've even taught at them. They're great if you can afford it. But I think there's so many resources more than ever that exist today for anyone who wants to be a filmmaker or producer. And there's a lot of books you can get online. There's a lot of shows you can watch that feature this kind of stuff. That is, nothing stops you from self-educating. The second thing is, I think there's this idea in Hollywood, or people who want to aspire to Hollywood, that you just have to convince one person. You got to get one investor to want you, you know, to your project, you yourself. You got to get one financier to take a shot on you. You got to get one person out there to take a chance on you. I think that's BS. I think that's become BS because in this industry, like, nothing, it doesn't exist anymore. The only person you have to get to believe in you is yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been proven true even in our case with our trio in a niche. Like, the reason Searching even came about is because on our own, we went out and shot something for $1,500. And that led to a series of events that got us ultimately having this film coming out this weekend. And again, at no point did we need somebody to give us a permission or approval. And I think I've seen too many people waste years of, like, waiting and, like, having their script, and rather than just kind of making the steps themselves.
So it sounds like more of, like, creating your own opportunities, right?
100%.
Yeah. Okay.
And I would add to that and say, take any opportunity. I think a lot of young filmmakers too, like, they know, you know, the end game for them. They want to direct, or they want to write, and they won't jump in to do anything else or something that doesn't necessarily fit in their, like, artistic kind of wheelhouse. I think Anish is a perfect example of that. Like, he shot a short film that Sev actually produced on Google Glass.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, they were trying to prove that they were, like, a viable filmmaking tool. And
they're not.
They're not. But he saw the opportunity that this is, like, a cool thing that no one else is doing. And that short film blew up. It went viral. And it got him a job at Google straight out of film school, which honestly ultimately led him to do Searching. So I think that's just a perfect example of, like, jump in and take an opportunity and just, like, you know, make it incredible and stand out.
Wow. All right. I think we've settled. I think I'm satisfied with that.
Okay, we covered the producing and whatnot.
Yeah. Like, okay,
it's helpful
cool.
for people to know, because, like, it's a generic title to some audience, because they're like, sure, like, what? But they have no concept of what that job entails.
No, totally. I don't think I knew what it was until I started doing it, truthfully.
Or all the subcategories.
Yeah. Right.
All right, so now I want to get into our feature presentation. So pretty much Searching. I have a brief overview here of Searching. And I believe we can roll the trailer while I talk about it. So if you don't mind. And then, director was Anish Shanganti. And it was written by Anish Shanganti as well as Sev Ohanian. Stars John Cho as David Kim, Deborah Messing as Detective Vic, Michelle La as Margot, and Joseph Lee as Peter Kim. Synopsis is, After his 16-year-old daughter goes missing, a desperate father breaks into her laptop to look for clues to find her. It was premiered at Sundance back in January. It won awards, the Audience Award, as well as the Alfred P. Sloan Feature Film Prize. And it finally got its wide release thanks to Sony Screen Gems this past Friday on August 31st. It came in the top five at the box office at fifth place between Disney's Christopher Robin and Operation Finale. Domestically, it has made $8 million. Foreign, it's made $6 million. Worldwide, as of today, it's $14 million worldwide.
Jesus, it's crazy. It's just crazy.
Can you guys disclose the budget for this film? Or
it's a lot higher than you would think it is.
Okay.
And also a lot lower than you would think it is.
It'll probably be listed on the IMDb page eventually.
Yeah, I mean, we'll put it this way. This is a film that has enormous scale for an independent film, right? You guys have seen the film. There's crowd shots. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen entire childhood in minutes. We have lake stuff, other set pieces I can't talk about. Yeah. All this stuff. And we shot it in
13 days.
My God.
So if that gives you
That should give you a sense of how much or how little we have.
I promise you it didn't cost, what was it, $15 million you said?
You've made $14 million worldwide right now.
So it did not cost $14
million. Yeah. Is it lower than that?
It's a fraction of that.
Double digits?
Just to put it in perspective, made it independently. Yeah. Yeah. So there was no, there was no studio behind it. There was Sony came on after Sundance. So
yeah, exactly. Once it
we made of, it was a scrappy production.
So
You say scrappy, and I like how Wellington in the chat says the way it is shot has really piqued my interest.
Yes, Wellington. Oh, I hope it did.
Yeah. Still sticking on that budget. I just have a ballpark of an idea.
Okay.
Because I know, I read that Screen Gems bought it for $5 million.
Yes.
So I'm guessing if they bought it for $5 million, they're trying to profit off of that. It'd have to be, I'm guessing it costs $5 to $7 million to make.
I wish it cost $5 to $7 million to make. We'd have much.
Really? So it was like $3 million.
If they bought it for $5 million, you'd want above what your budget was.
Just to like talk about
getting warm, getting
cold. My real guess is $3 million.
So the way it works is, if we're lucky enough to premiere a film at Sundance, which we were, we had our premiere at 6:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. It's a dream come true for filmmakers, right? We're after the premiere, we have no clue how the movie does, and we're like all checking Twitter. We go to our premiere party, and it feels really good. And then at one point, our agents came and grabbed us, and they were like, "We have to leave."
Yeah, they're like, "Let's go." And we're like, "Go where?"
It's in the middle of our premiere party. We've spent the last 2.5 years working on this film, and they drag us out of our party, and they take us to like this top secret cabin. And then we spent from 8 p.m. to 6:30 a.m. that evening, up all night in the middle of this bidding war about the movie. And it's like all these various studios came and they were pitching us their marketing plans, how they were going to release the movie, and then their lawyers and our lawyers were like negotiating what the fee is. So just to answer the question, like the purchase price of a movie from a studio has nothing to do with the budget. It all has to do with how much they think other people are willing to pay. Mm-hmm. So that price increases in our case, luckily, because there was so much interest.
Because of the demand, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
And it wasn't just the price. I mean, we teamed up with the right studio. I mean, they were so passionate, and they've done such an amazing job marketing and releasing the film. So it's never just the money. But yeah, our budget was absolutely a fraction of that price.
And so how did that feel being... And were you there as well? Everyone was there?
It was nuts.
How was that? Being taken out of your premiere party into this cabin for like busting an all-nighter just to like... Because studios are hungry for this movie. How did that feel when your film is in demand?
I mean, it was nuts because like the Sundance legend, right? Is that you go, you make your movie independently, you get to Sundance, which is like a high in and of itself. And if you're lucky, you'll be that like one, two, or like three films a year that have that all-night bidding war. And I kept telling, like, I had friends and family texting me, like, what's going on? Like, right after the movie, and I was like, guys, it's not going to happen tonight. Like, that happens, like, no percent of the time. And then cut to, like, half hour later, we're, like, meeting with distributors. It was nuts. I mean, we always knew the movie was good. We worked on it for 2 years. We were, we knew we had a good film. But to get that kind of response and to sell it, like, literally 6, 7, 8, whatever hours later, it was just... It was nuts. It was like an out-of-body experience for me, definitely.
Especially since you're like going all night. You're just
We were just like, what's... Yeah,
our favorite thing was we got the three of us, so this is Anish, Nat, and myself, we got back to our own, where we were staying at Sundance at like 7 a.m., ready to sleep. And And we were told that they were going to announce the sale at 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. So we're like, great, we can at least sleep for three hours and then wake up.
Hour and a half.
Yeah, because we assume, like, once the announcement comes out, it's going to be even more chaotic. And then, like, as we were, like, closing our eyes at, like, 7:01, somehow it leaked and it became announced. We turned off our phones and just went to sleep. And we woke up and it was, like, different. It was insane.
I mean, safe to say our lives changed overnight.
Really? Were you ready for it?
Yeah. Not necessarily ready, but embraced it with open arms.
That's awesome.
With all the tweets recently for the film, too, I saw a couple saying how it's doing so well abroad, too. What's it like to have, like, your film be in the top spots?
It's insane.
I think it was Korea and Malaysia.
We made $4.5 million in South Korea over one weekend, which is just, like, bananas.
Which apparently doesn't happen in that country.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. So cool.
It's been cool because... what's been great about the release of this film, it's a movie that we all believe is going to live or die based on word of mouth. And we're really grateful that the word of mouth has been insane. Like, and it was funny, we were just talking to Sony recently. Like, if you look at the UK, it premiered like at number 5 or something on Saturday, but by Monday it had gone up to like number 2 or something. You know, like most movies tend to decline after a couple days, and it speaks to like the movie seems to be really being embraced by the internet and by people who watch the movie. So that... You know, we're in the middle of it right now. You know, we have no idea what's going to happen, but we're just happy that anybody is seeing the film, let alone people.
Seeing it, but also, like, the coolest thing has been people tweeting about how they're seeing it not once, but twice and sometimes three times.
Yes.
Just to figure out if they could, like, find the clues. And, like, that is just, as, like, a movie geek and a nerd who watches things a billion times, it's just, like, so cool that people are that invested and willing to go put money down to see it again.
Yeah, Natalie and I snuck into a theater here in Glendale this weekend.
We paid for a ticket.
That's true. We paid for the ticket. Sorry, Glendale Police Department. But we didn't, like, announce our presence or anything. Yeah. We didn't, like, introduce a movie, which we've done a couple times. And it was just cool being in the crowd as, like, spies. And, like, I remember there was a woman behind us who was, I guess, on a date.
Yeah.
And, like, in the first minute, so as you know, the movie takes place on screens, she whispered to her date, was like, is the whole movie going to be like this?
not feeling it.
And then 5 minutes later, she was sobbing. Because as you guys have seen, the opening is emotional.
Oh,
I compare it to Up, which is like the first 10 minutes of Up just destroy your heart. Mm-hmm. And then you're just like, oh my God, this is the same feeling.
Totally. And then there was a woman to our left who was so engaged. At one point, she was gripping my hand like literally
and
complete stranger.
Talking to the screen.
Yeah, it was really cool. That's like the craziest thing is like people clap at the end of the movie. And then we've been hearing that all over the internet. Mm-hmm. And we didn't believe it until we saw it ourselves. It's crazy.
Well, because it's a different environment seeing it regular theater versus a festival. Festivals have kind of this heightened environment.
Yes.
Now, you had the Sundance premiere, and then you also had your Los Angeles premiere at Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival, and that's where I got to see it.
Yes.
And talk to you on the red carpet as well. That screening, there were some moments where there was laughter. Mm-hmm. I can't quite recall exactly what spots those were, but were there any moments where people reacted to it in a way that surprised you or you found amusing?
I mean, not at that particular screening, but there is a...
Natalie knows.
Can we say it without spoiling?
Well,
yeah, we can. Kind of.
Which part?
When David's on UCAS.
So yeah, there's one scene, and this is something we found in previous screenings, that like we wrote something, Anish and I, and we shot it as a team, in which at one point, David Kim, played by John Cho, accidentally streams a video of himself on the internet. It was always meant to be, like, in our minds, a beat of, like, showing you how little David knows about how the internet works.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all it was. It was just a simple beat. I remember when we screened it at, like, test audiences, people were cracking up at that. And we were like, that's not funny. But then we were like, you know what? It is funny.
Yeah.
So that's been, like, we've had a lot of cool moments. I mean, it's just part of the process of making any film. Like, the movie makes itself after a while, you know?
Yeah. I think one of the laughs was, like, when the screensaver's on. Because it's very kind of
old. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
I
and
love
just
that.
It's just the screensaver.
Honestly, this is weird, but I got, like, reminiscence of, like, 2001 A Space Odyssey when it's just a blank screen and you just hear, like, the, That was, like, the visual equivalent to that.
Hell, yeah.
Where I'm just like, this is amazing because it's just so ethereal and it's so, like, majestic and it's just, it's so, like... I don't want to say dumb, but it's just so simple because it's like it's a screensaver. Yeah. So like I see that all every day, but you see it in the big screen and you're just in the darkness. You're like, this is beautiful. Like I remember thinking like this is wow. Like
well, I mean that's well, fine. Oh, go for it.
I was saying the Windows XP too. One of the first frames of the movie that gets a laugh sometimes because people are like reminiscing.
I remember that.
Even writing that screensaver moment, we knew in the script. This is early in the movie when David's asleep. He gets calls from Margot. we were like, okay, how do we convey he's asleep and he's getting these phone calls?
It's the calm before the storm.
And exactly. Yeah. And we were like, okay, so the computer can't be off, obviously. And then we were like, well, what about a screensaver? And we're like, okay, but what screensaver? And at first we were going to do...
Pipes. You guys,
shout out to Pipes.
Classic.
But like, we were like, on a Mac computer, there was this one that a lot of people had, which was a definition. You guys ever see that? Where your computer,
yeah.
It just like shows like the word of the day and what it means. Mm-hmm. And we're like, how cool would it be if it's like thematic? And it's like the word is like foreshadowing.
Oh, no. Amber.
And then we're like, wait, like we realized that other screensaver exists. And it was like one of those moments where we just started jumping up and down for like 5 hours. And we're like, that's going to be the sickest scene ever.
They literally jump up and down when they have a breakthrough.
I love that. So, yeah. I love that device. It was, I thought it was genius. I was like, wow. Like,
yeah.
Like just at first I just kind of give myself way to it, you know, and I experienced it. But afterwards I was just like, damn, like that was really effective.
Yeah, well, the challenge for us was like, you know, we didn't necessarily jump at the opportunity to make this film. You know, I don't know if you know the story, but we were, Anish and I pitched it as an 8-minute short film, and then we were asked to develop into a feature, which we were absolutely resistant against. We didn't want to make a movie on a computer screen. It sounded like such a gimmick. But once he and I cracked that opening sequence, the Up meets a Google commercial sequence, we were like, okay, we can tell a really cool, engaging story that's humanistic and is emotional, and we can make it complement the style. Like, we didn't want to just, you know, like some movies that have been on computer screens, you could argue that it's like, it's kind of a, it's a gimmick. But in our case, we're like, if we can find everything that you do on a computer screen, whether it's a screensaver, deleting your trash, shutting down, writing comments, deleting comments, waiting for comments, if we can find the human, like, emotional connection to those moments, and if we can then apply that to a otherwise really good traditional story, it could work. And I love that was your reaction to that screensaver, because that was exactly the goal that we had when we even set out to make the movie.
No, yeah, I thought it was brilliant. Like, I personally conveyed it. I was like, dang, that's solid.
And the video chat, you guys ended up using FaceTime versus Skype, right? Because I remember at the Q&A after the festival, you're commenting how the problem with Skype is once you're done with the call, it stops. And so it's like, how do you keep it on in that voyeuristic way that we can keep watching that character?
Yeah. So if you, it's funny, Anish and I were, this is on the early screenwriting phase. He did a FaceTime call to me. We were right next to each other. And then when he hits end the call, what FaceTime does, as you mentioned, it like literally just shows you whatever's on your webcam.
Yeah.
And we're like, bada bing, bada boom. The movie's going to take place on Apple computers with FaceTime. So,
that's one of the things that I was able to really appreciate, too, because although everything we see, like, video-wise on the screen, you guys had it for sure, like, shoot that stuff and make that from scratch. But, like, the devices that are used to show those videos is all that was already there. It's, like, real technology that it already existed. Like, you used the FaceTime. You used texting. And I thought it was so brilliant how you used everything that is already there for us that everyone uses and, like, elevated, elevated them as tools. And I just thought it was really brilliant how you guys didn't have to create those interfaces, you know, it was just all there and you guys just utilized them. And the way that you also compose, like the shots were composed, because you know, it's a screen, right? Like there's a certain cap as to how far you can see, but then you instead of trying to like always keep it on the wide, like, or on like the whole screen, you zoom in a bit. And then I thought it was brilliant too when you zoom in and you're able to see John Cho's face. When you see his face and his reaction to what he's seeing on another window is so brilliant. At the same time, he's talking to someone else. I'm just like, wow. Like, was that, like, challenging for you guys? Like, I'm sure there's, like, a DP attached, but was he also, like, attached to, like, how the framing was going to be on the screen? Or how'd that work out?
Yeah, totally. So we had a traditional DP, Sebastian Barone, who shot all the live-action stuff in the 13 days. But that kind of framing that you're talking about of everything, of seeing the web browsers and whatnot, a lot of that was done with our editors, Will Merrick and Nick Johnson.
Okay.
We actually created a credit for them specially because they, in a way, were like DPs of the screen and not, you know, not just editors.
Yeah, it's so like a virtual world in a sense.
Yeah, they're directors of virtual photography.
Oh, yeah. Is that what the title was?
We made up a credit for this
movie. That's awesome.
So if the Oscars have a new category of best virtual photography, I think we have a shot.
Well, I'm laughing, but like cut to 10, in 10 years, that'll probably exist.
So have you ever replied to a tweet of somebody writing like the gimmicks of how they film the screens? I loved your reply like, no, those were for real.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, this isn't the first movie that's ever taken place on screens, and what differs from us, it's kind of what you touched upon, is So we made the movie for a production company called Baslevs. Mm-hmm. That was also the same company that made Unfriended and Unfriended 2. And they presented to us a Bible of how to make computer movies. They actually had, because they're making so many of them, rule number one was it's all got to be one big wide shot. Mm-hmm. Number two is it's got to be real time, no editing. Number three, it's got to be on one computer. And the three of us were just like, why? You know, like it's already such a restrictive medium. We felt like those kinds of movies resembled like the earliest cinema ever. Like if you guys have ever seen The Great Train Robbery or whatever, it's like camera sitting like there.
Static.
Static, mm-hmm.
Action's happening. Exactly. And we're like, there's been 100 years of cinematic techniques. Like let's do zooms and moves and pans and montages and mise en scène.
Mise en scène.
That's the one. Yeah, exactly. let's have fun with it. And that was kind of, you know, we just want to make something that would be a little bit more cinematic than you could probably... I mean, what's been great is so many people have said online, like, I went in not knowing what to expect, and it was a movie, and we're like, great.
Yeah, or going in with low expectations, which I'm like, totally get it. Like, if you pitched me this too, I maybe would think this thought the same thing, and they come out blown away.
The thing that surprised me with the opening, like, shot of the film, which is when you see that desktop, like, how weird I felt. I was like, oh my god, like so many things went through my mind. I was like, am I gonna be into this? Am I like, I was like, no, let's just give yourself just keep watching,
give yourself time.
And then I was blown away at just how fast I adapted to it. You know, I was just like, okay. And then like even the quiet scenes where you just see the mouse like cursor just move around and search things and you hear the typing and everything, I'm just like, this is amazing. What's gonna happen? What's he looking up? Like I'm just like, oh my god, I can't wait on him to type more.
That is
like
awesome.
Like yeah, it really grips you in a very satisfying way that doesn't alienate you at the same time. I really appreciated that. Like, it felt like you said, cinematic, and I feel confident calling you guys like pioneers. Although they have been films such as Unfriended, you guys took it. You looked at the rule book, which there should never be a rule book for film because it's an art form. There are no like rules to art, you know. At least my opinion. You know, El Topo, whatever. And, but also like. Yeah, you guys threw away the book, and you're like, we're going to do it our way. We have a great take on how we're going to do it. And you guys pulled it off, and it's. I think this is part of a cinematic, like a cinematic history, because this is like a certain type of, like, in a sense, revolution pertaining to these type of films that are the on-screen genre of, like, in a sense, not really found footage, but like on-screen genre films. And the fact that you were also able to incorporate emotion as well as you did, because I was gripping my seat in like the last act. I'm like, oh my god, yeah. I think it's safe to now go into spoiler territory
I was gonna say actually real quick, kind of summarizing a few questions from the chat and kind of summarizing how you've had such a unique concept of how to do it, and then the story is pretty cool. But when you're gathering those ideas, are you keeping it amongst yourselves? Are you reaching out on advice on how to do that? Because that idea of not wanting someone else to go, ooh, I like this idea, and take it.
For searching specifically.
Yes.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I mean,
and then in general, as filmmakers of, you know, what is that process like? Of, do you find the people you trust and go for advice? Or, you know, how do you keep those cards close to you?
Totally. I mean, I think... we're not as precious about certain ideas. I mean, the funny thing is we used to joke about how it took us so long to make this movie, we were concerned someone else might beat us to the punch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we always were like, well, it's going to take us 3 years to make this. It's going to take other people probably even longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing that it's funny, going back to what producers do, it's like one thing that Natalie and I have kind of developed internally in what we do with all of our projects is we are very much about reaching out to the community and getting help. You know, even the script that we wrote for this movie didn't even resemble a regular script at all. It was a scriptment.
Yeah, I was reading on that.
It kind of reads like a novel, and the texting looks like texting and stuff like that. In fact, Natalie forced me and Anish to rewrite it from scratch. But we sent it out to like a lot of friends, and we were like, "Hey, can you read this?" And then we would get on calls with them and do like probably about 100 questions over the phone. Did you like this moment? Did you see that twist coming? Did you get that joke? Did you get that reference?
And even during the editing process, we brought in our, you know, our filmmaker friends, non-filmmakers, just like trusted friends and family. And yeah, we're definitely not precious. We're more about like, how do we make this thing better and bring in the people that we trust that are like making cool things around us.
Mm. Yeah. And I think that it could be risky having this idea of like trying to hold on to your ideas too tightly, because there's a lot of ways you could protect yourself, you know, on a legal or whatever level. I think the filmmakers that are more willing to like go out and exit their comfort zone and get people's eyes on stuff tend to be the ones who I think know how to develop their material in a way that'll be more audience friendly. Does that kind of answer the question?
No, it definitely makes sense if it's, you know, getting advice from those you trust and not necessarily like everybody. But yes. It's like you had your own test audiences.
So oh, yeah.
Exactly.
That makes sense of seeing the twist come, too, because if you already know what it is, it's not going to be a surprise. So it's like you almost need someone else to be the guinea pig.
Yeah. Exactly.
And with that there segue. We go. Speaking of that. Segue. All right. So, yeah, let's get into some spoiler territory.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler zone, baby. Yeah. Let's do it.
All right, guys. Spoiler alert. So if you have not seen Searching and are okay with spoilers, stay. If you're not okay with spoilers, please leave.
Yeah.
With our last 10 minutes, let's get into that ending, because my god, you guys blew my socks off. I didn't see it coming. You guys red herring me so hard. Like, from the start, his brother.
Johnny, really quick question. You said, what did we do to you?
We blew our socks.
After that, we red haired.
Red hair. It's not really a verb, but like.
No, but really quick. Like, what was the color of the hair of the girl whose picture you saw?
The color of the hair of the.
Oh, she is red.
She's a redhead.
Oh my god. Was it fish and chips?
Fish and chips, baby.
Oh my god, they got me good.
We red haired y'all.
Damn. Oh my god. Okay, that
literally
just clicked. I'm so slow.
Bye, Wellington. Somebody's like, spoiler time. Peace. Go.
Sorry, Wellington.
But, yeah, don't ruin it.
So far, so good. Thank you for not spoiling ahead in the chat. But yeah, now it's spoiler time.
Yeah, okay. Wow, okay. That.
I don't know,
remarkable.
Maybe, did you chat much as a kid? Because I totally, when AOL chat first came out, I lied about everything about
I was. Oh my god, that's
amazing. Yeah, because I was
ASL?
Like, yeah.
age, sex, location.
Yes. I was like, I live in Australia, I'm blonde, I'm 25 years old, and I'm like, you know, middle school or something at the time.
Yes.
So I didn't trust anything anybody said. So when there are kids today that assume, I'm like, please.
Yeah, this was we're old timers, man. Yeah. We know, yeah.
That was really good. Yeah. The initial suspect I think you guys audience center on is the brother. Mainly because since like that first, I think when he's introduced is when he calls about asking about the gumbo recipe.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why is he making that, like, you know, like since his mom, like it's weird. Like,
it's sketchy. He should have known his behavior was sketch.
So that, once I saw that, I put it in my back pocket, you know, and then once it all kind of comes out, well, he also had the weed there. So I was like, makes sense. And then, I was just like, oh, man, they were, like, once you see those texts, I was like, oh, well, they were doing something. But then once we got to it, I was like, no, this doesn't feel right. There's something not right about it. And it's more like, I think the main focus, along with, like, red herring, is showing how far David has come. Like, how far he's fallen off because he's been so obsessed. And he's been, like, his daughter's been missing for days now. And he's just becoming desperate, and so you see his desperation thank you come alive and attack his brother, and
understandable position to come from,
right? And it turns out I was just smoking her out, and I was just like, oh snap, okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm just like, wait, so where do we go from here? And I felt like I was in limbo for a bit. I'm just like, who's my suspect now? I'm just like, what do I think, what do I do? And then it comes out, and here's, like, the huge spoiler, everybody. So it comes out that it is actually Detective... I forgot his name.
Vic.
Sorry.
Vic, thank you.
Detective Rosemary Vic.
Which is a little Easter egg in and of itself.
Really? Rosemary Vic.
Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, and? Snap.
Right, she gave birth to evil, right? And
oh,
real
my Vic? God. That's
the real bad guy.
They have
in the movie.
A lot of
I like
one
that.
Of my favorites. Of all
and
time.
Then your is it your mother's photo or her name that you used?
Really quickly, Rosemary Side Vic. Note. Vic is a reference to Vic Mackey, who's a corrupt cop in The Shield.
Okay.
So we told you from her name. You didn't pick that up.
Dang.
My mother, which you meant. So everybody in this movie, every picture you say, we had to get permission to put them on there. So as a result, every single photograph, every single name is a loved one of Anisha's, mm-hmm. mine, Natalie's, or two editors. And the piano teacher, Mrs. Vartui Shahinian, is my mother. Oh. It's her name, it's her maiden name, and it's her picture. We didn't put my last name to make it not distracting, but that's my mom. And Nat's sisters are in there. Yeah.
Like our whole families are all over the place.
Fun. Yeah, it's partially as a love to them, and partially as we just had no choice.
Yeah.
getting a little bit ahead, but Glamoury says, I love that the writers wrote how awful comments are, even about people who die or their family.
That was very real. Yeah, mm-hmm. especially along with toxic fandom, but also with sensational
celebrity,
how sensational toxic news is now, and how everyone has mm-hmm. a voice to that sensational news that's happening.
Yeah,
yeah, that was very brutal. you guys captured that commentary really well as mm-hmm. I guess a desensitization as a society we've become to, you know, another human being who's going through something so hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was meant to just be touching upon it. We didn't want to be preaching. We didn't want to have an agenda. And it was just real. You know, it felt like it would add to David's descent into madness. Mm-hmm. And I think the one thing that we always see is this ownership over tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, in any case where someone, let's say a well-loved celebrity might pass away, and everyone's owning that, you know, this is, I'm so sad and this and that, and not to mention actual big national tragedies. And it just felt like a natural place for a story to go. And if we can have fun with it, and at the same time, it added to the theme of how well we know each other and our online personas. It just felt like it was too juicy for us to not touch upon it.
Yeah.
And it felt really natural. Again, it didn't feel preachy. It's just this happens. And you're like, oh man,
My favorite part ever is when Abby, her friend.
Oh my God.
Is
crying.
Yeah, totally admits to using her to get good grades. And then the second she's gone, it's like, she was my best friend. That's the best mm-hmm. moment for me.
And then that one kid too, hey, I decided to just help you with the search. I was like, John God. Watson. Yeah, I was just like, dude, you are terrible.
I will admit, I'm not normally that person who can call it, but at the end, I leaned over a friend and I'm like, so how soon did you realize? But it wasn't so obvious, since I loved how it comes out.
Yeah.
And it was more just, I felt she was so suspicious to me.
Yeah.
And then how there was a thing with the kid, and it was the shot where he's in the background. I'm like, oh, yeah.
I mean, if you ever look at that shot.
Pops out.
Yeah, when he pops into the room and she's like, go away.
Yeah, well, there's two. Yeah. That's when I was like, oh.
If you ever rewatch the film, and I hope people do because it sounds like people are doing it, there are two times we see him in live action is when she's running out of her bedroom down the hallway to go to her car to join David at the lake. There's a shot of him. There's crazy blue light coming from behind him. He's all in silhouette. It's creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second time you're talking about when he enters the room,
silhouette.
He's like a silhouette. Ooh. He looks like the freaking, death. And it mm-hmm. was... We shot all of those instances regular lighting, crazy lighting, mm-hmm. and like Natalie said, we did so much feedback screenings. We found that 90% of audiences miss so many of the clues,
mm-hmm.
and even when David calls her saying, "Hey, I'm driving to the spot she's been going at. Call mm-hmm. me back. It's 3:40." And she calls him and she's like, "Are you at the lake?" He never said lake.
He says the spot.
I don't think I noticed that.
So we found that audiences are willing to suspend their belief. Too. You know, you trust Deborah Messing because it's Deborah Messing.
Yeah.
And it's a mother. She's a regular lady.
Totally.
And then, but then you're like, oh, she would do anything for her child.
Exactly.
But I did like the twist of what happens with the daughter at the very end. I was like, I don't know if it's going to go that way. And so that one I was like, oh, good. Because I thought, nope. That's it.
Yeah, it definitely ends on a high note, which is very happy, very, very nice to see in today's films. There has been a good amount of what I've seen from horror movies, the really upsetting feeling where you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe, I don't know. I do enjoy that feeling too as well. But as we wrap up, we have time for one more question. And I just want to say, I want to ask you, what about this film do you want audiences to take from it, and also just what this film meant to you, making it? And you can go one by one or tackle each question or one question. It's all good.
Yeah,
I'd say, I think at the end of the day, you know, screens aside, mystery aside even, which I think is really the fun part of the movie, it's a story about family, and mm-hmm. I think the whole trajectory of David not even knowing that he doesn't know his daughter. That makes
sense. Yeah, it makes sense. Checks out.
Yeah, that to me, that just the arc, his arc with her and their relationship is what I hope people walk out of the theater with and just, you know, take a second to really reach out and genuinely communicate to people. I think we all talk and so many different ways, but, you know, have a real meaningful conversation.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Oh, yeah, go. And I will say, you know, in our next film that we're doing next, it's called Run. Mm-hmm. We're shooting it with Lionsgate. We're actually flying to Canada with Anish tomorrow.
Wow.
Oh,
the
wow.
next 3 months to work on that. Yeah. It also centers around family, and I think that's going to be a really fun one to talk to you guys about, because that's going to be probably the darkest thing Ooh. We ever do.
Can you quickly Ooh. Share the synopsis of it?
We'll share the we'll share the one that we've released, which is a story about a mother and a daughter.
What is that?
And a daughter who comes to learn that her mother might have been keeping a secret from her whole life.
Okay.
Nice. And it's called wow. Run.
Right on. And with that, we got to wrap up, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, my God. What a great episode. Great yes. interview. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, guys.
We're just going to finally wrap up. And, yeah, you can tell. Can you tell everyone where they can find you on social media? And
Yes. You can find our film, Searching, at Searching Movie. And I'm Sevohanian. I'm at Sevohanian.
And I'm N. Kasabian, at N. Kasabian.
Right on.
Thanks, guys.
Cool. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been real fun breaking down this movie, for sure.
Yeah, thank you guys for having us. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Thanks for getting to the spoilers. That was so
yeah.
fun.
Yeah, I'm glad we could fit it. All right, Carrie?
All right, yes, you guys can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-A-N-E.
And again, my name is Anthony Becerra. You can find me everywhere at TonyBTony_. Be sure to go watch Searching out in theaters right now. Yes. Drive the 50, 60 miles you got to go to. It's okay. Yeah. It's worth it. It's part of history. Yeah. And with that, until next time, next week, another episode, and we'll catch you later. Happy,
see ya.
Happy days. I don't know. Producers and creative editors, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire... The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.